What's not working about work? Even though for most of us, our jobs are central to our lives, Americans report higher levels of stress, burnout, and dissatisfaction than ever. So what can we do about it? Bridget Schulte has ideas in her new book, Overwork, Transforming the Daily Grind in the Quest for a Better Life. Bridget wrote the bestseller Overwhelmed and is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who formerly wrote for The Washington Post. Here she is to share five of her big ideas.
Hi, I'm Bridget Schulte. I'm a journalist, author, and director of the Better Life Lab at New America. I'm also a mother, a wife, a daughter, sister, aunt, friend, and neighbor. I've dedicated my career to finding a way to ensure that everyone, not just a lucky few, can live a good life with time for meaningful work and for love, care, and connection, and for play, leisure, and joy. In my new book, Overwork, Transforming the Daily Grind in the Quest for a Better Life, I explore how work and the way we think about it, organize, and do it is demanding more of our time, effort, and attention. It's squeezing out time for the good life. I show how, when we change work, everyone benefits. My search for people reimagining the way we work took me across the United States and around the globe. My book tells their hopeful stories, shares some creative ideas we can all learn from, and shows that when work gets better, our lives get better too. I'd like to share five insights that I've learned. Insight number one, work isn't working. It may even be killing us. We work to earn a living, to support our families, buy our daily bread, and to survive. We also find meaning and a sense of fulfillment in our work. Our identities can be so wrapped up in our jobs that the first question we ask after being introduced to someone is, "What do you do?" A majority of people say they'd want to keep working even if they won the lottery. But work has become more of a grind. Gallup surveys show workers are disengaged and unhappy. Many feel they're working all the time, and when they're not, they're consumed by thinking about work or feeling guilty that they're not working. Many workers feel like they're working harder and falling further behind. And many are. From the end of the Second World War through the 1970s, as productivity rose in the United States, wages rose right along with it. But ever since then, wages have barely budged for a lot of reasons. Tax policy, decisions in Washington, and corporations deciding that their purpose was to make a lot of money for the small number of their shareholders rather than use their profits to take care of their workers. The Rand Corporation estimates that between 1975 and 2018, $5 trillion transferred from the bottom 90% to the top 1%. The United States now has one of the highest rates of economic inequality of any advanced economy. Workers are simply no longer enjoying the fruits of their labor. I was shocked to learn that 44% of the workforce in the U.S., the richest country on earth, is low wage. Two-thirds of those earning the lowest wages are women, often women of color. Congress hasn't raised the federal minimum wage of $7.25 since 2009. It's $2.19 for tipped workers and as low as 25 cents an hour for disabled workers. Meanwhile, the cost of housing, food, education, childcare, and health have continued to climb. We have this idea that if people are struggling financially, they just need to work harder. But one study I found showed that nearly three-fourths of those who are poor enough to qualify for some kind of public benefit actually work full-time. What does that tell you? Not that people are lazy, but that too many jobs aren't big enough to support human life. And work has become bad for our health. Work stress and burnout are so prevalent that in 2019, the World Health Organization declared them serious problems. One analysis found that the way we work is not only making us sick, but in the United States, has become the fifth leading cause of death. I tell the story of Kate Lindemann. She was a dedicated lawyer who worked long hours under demanding, stressful, and often toxic conditions. One day, when she began having unbearable chest pains, she wound up in the ER. She was a young, healthy woman in her mid-30s, yet she was also having a heart attack, brought on by acute work stress. "Wow," her doctor told her, "your job really made you sick." Insight number two, working hard doesn't mean working long. Economists say work has become greedy. In many workplaces, the person who puts in the longest hours is seen as the best or the ideal worker and rewarded with higher pay and promotions. The expectation is that someone else is taking care of any family or outside duties so the ideal worker can be totally devoted to work. Americans now work among the longest hours of any advanced economy. In my reporting, I found that professional workers are driven to overwork in one job, striving to be seen as that ideal worker. And I found hourly workers overworking in a series of precarious part-time jobs, gigs, and side hustles just to survive. And many of them are expected to be on call at all hours, ready to go into work at a moment's notice. We all value hard work, but working hard doesn't mean working long hours. Research shows that longer work hours are actually counterproductive to producing good work. Instead, they lead to higher rates of burnout, exhaustion, mistakes, and fuzzy thinking. International comparisons show how celebrating busyness and long work hours is disconnected from reality. The longer a country's work hours, the lower the productivity. Rewarding long work hours are also a big reason why women earn less and are promoted less often than men. Women are still primarily responsible for taking care of families at home. They're simply unable to put in the same long hours at work. But it's not just women anymore. One Harvard Business School survey found that nearly three-fourths of all workers have care responsibilities at home now. Insight number three, to make work better, stop the stupid work and focus on priorities, process, and performance. It's easier for managers to measure the input of long work hours. It's something you can see. It's much harder to evaluate the output or impact of what workers actually produce. And yet that's what leads to better work. I reported on work redesign efforts and followed organizations that were forced to experiment and get creative during the pandemic. What I found is that when they focused on priorities, streamlined their processes, and measured performance, they created cultures of high trust, productivity, performance, and equity. When you measure by output and impact, it allows for flexibility in when, where, and how people do their work. Giving people autonomy and more control over their schedules fosters a more engaged workforce doing better work, and it gives people more time for their lives. It levels the playing field for workers with care duties. It also opens the door to shorter work hours. In long work hours cultures, there's a lot of what researchers call waste, and I call stupid work. Bloated meetings, too much email, inefficient or overly complicated systems, and too much time on low-value tasks to give the appearance of busyness in an ideal worker culture. Like the guy who was making blank copies at 11 o'clock at night at the office just because his boss expected him to be there, he told me, even though he had nothing to do. I went to Iceland, where they've made shorter work hours at the same rate of pay available to 85% of the workforce. To do that, every team in every organization has had to rethink how they work. People I spoke to said they had to start from scratch. They had to identify their most valuable work, then work backwards to figure out how to organize their days to focus on doing that. Some teams combed through their days in 15-minute intervals and worked together to come up with creative ideas. Many were surprised that they'd never questioned how they worked before. I talked to social workers who said they put an end to a bunch of internal meetings that everyone hated, and no one could remember why they'd started or why they kept doing them. That freed up more time to be out in the field helping people and doing the work they loved. Insight number four, when you put human well-being first, everybody wins. People are often the biggest expense on a company's balance sheet. So when profits are down or companies want their books to look good for quarterly earnings reports, the first thing they often do is cut labor costs. They lay off or fire people. But treating workers as widgets is not good for people. It's also not good for business. In the most basic sense, you're only as good as your people. And treating them well pays dividends all around. Cultures that value well-rested and healthy workers, taking breaks through the day, setting firm boundaries around work, and that encourage vacation, they create the conditions for more innovation. Neuroscience shows that rest is the key to fresh thinking. Our brains are literally wired to have our best ideas in the shower. Making all jobs good jobs sets off a virtuous upward spiral. In my book, I tell the story of what happened when Washington State made home care jobs good jobs. As our society ages, home care workers are projected to be the largest occupation in the economy by the 2030s. This is important work, yet the jobs are terrible. Most home care workers earn poverty wages. They work unpredictable schedules and have no benefits, so there aren't enough people willing to do the job to meet the demand. The state of Washington worked with union and business leaders to make these jobs good jobs. Now, home care workers earn living wages. They have retirement savings, health care, paid sick days, free training, and other benefits. As a result, the home care workforce is more stable. That's made the quality of care better for the people who need it. And with more people able to stay in their homes and out of expensive nursing homes, the state is saving money. Insight number 5. We need to think about work in a much bigger way. I love my work, but what I consider work isn't only what I do in my paid job. It is also all the unpaid work of caring for my family, making a home, and volunteering in my community. Yet paid work is what we value most highly. Paid work is what we count in gross domestic product to measure a nation's wealth. Because we don't value unpaid work in the same way, it's discounted in our overwork cultures and squeezed into the corners of our lives. Yet it's enormously valuable work. Economists calculate that GDP would get a boost of between 25 and 40% if we included the unpaid work of care and home. Our unpaid work is also what makes life worth living. So the first of the 3 main arguments I make in the book is that it's time to think about work in a much bigger way. That work is both what we do for pay and our unpaid labor of care and home. Second, all of that work should be good work. The Dutch historian Jan Lucassen says that throughout human history, good work has been defined by 3 principles: meaning, fairness, and cooperation. That means getting the basics right, ensuring paid work can support a decent life and that it's flexible, focused on people and performance, and makes room for our unpaid work. Finally, I argue we are simply overwork. We're done. It's time to transform this daily grind into something so much better. The stories I tell in my book show us the way. We are limited only by the horizon of our imaginations and the stories we tell. It's time for a new story of work. One that recognizes solving the problem of overwork isn't solely an individual responsibility, as many a lunchtime yoga offering would like us to believe. It's up to all of us. Corey Feist is one of a number of people I profile who are reimagining work. "We don't need more resilient canaries," he told me. "We need a new coal mine." Thanks for listening. I'm Bridget Schulte. I hope you enjoy Overwork and will perhaps be inspired to join me in reimagining work.
Thank you, Bridget. That was Bridget Schulte with 5 big ideas from Overwork, Transforming the Daily Grind in the Quest for a Better Life. Also check out our book bite for Burnout Immunity, How Emotional Intelligence Can Help You Build Resilience and Heal Your Relationship with Work by Candy Weems. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.